version of the Vedic literature, like Srimad Bhagavatam, which is accepted unanimously by great acharyas. Before we speak on anything on Srimad Bhagavatam, let us offer our respectful obeisances to the great acharyas.
ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं. वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलम् श्रीगुरोन् वैष्णवांश श्रीरूपां साग्रजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश. हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धु जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकान्त राधाकान्त नमोस्तुते. सप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये. जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद. हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे.
मुखम करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमं वन्दे श्रीगुरुदिनतारणम्. So, first of all, I feel very embarrassed to sit on this exalted seat. Just by the request of senior devotees, I'm just taking this as service. You know, when these small children speak up, they have just started to speak up. They were 3-4 years old and they speak some broken language. And it gives great joy to the parents seeing them speaking up, even though they are not speaking something. So, I'm just like a small child trying to speak something on this subject matter. So kindly forgive me for the shortcomings on this. You know, once Prabhupada was telling, the very first book which Prabhupada wrote was Easy Journey to Other Planets, you know, very beginning, 1950s or somewhere. And he was selling this book in Jhansi. And there was a young gentleman, he came up to Prabhupada and Prabhupada was trying to sell his book to this gentleman. And he was saying that by reading this book you can go to Golok Vrindavan. And in Golok Vrindavan there is no birth, old age, disease and death. And there is unlimited enjoyment and you can actually personally serve Lord Krishna. He said okay. That actually the gentleman was very happy to hear this. But after taking this book in his hand and he said, after going back to Golok Vrindavan, can I come back to Jhansi again? So, you know, Prabhupada asked him, why you want to come back to Jhansi after going to Golok Vrindavan? So that person, he was not able to understand, you know. So actually it is said that the home is where the heart is, you know. And we said that we want to go back home, back to Godhead. But our heart has to be in Vrindavan first. You know, if our heart is, you know, I just don't know. Sometimes I just go to this Google Earth, this software. And the very first place which you want to see on Google Earth is not Vrindavan or Mayapur, it is our home. Even though we are seeing. So it's the mentality actually, even the... You know, the very first cosmonaut who went to the space, the Russian cosmonaut, after going to space, he wanted to look how Moscow looks from the space. So it's just wherever our heart is, you know, that is the place where, you know, our we find our home, the resting place. So there are few points which we discuss in the due course of this lecture. These are the first is how the entire material world is a place of misery. From the topmost to the planet to the bottommost planet of Patala. Then the different process of gaining knowledge, Satyaksha Praman, Anuman and Shabda Praman. Then the fallacy of modern scientific approach of gaining knowledge. Then yoga as a means of reviving our connection with the Supreme and not just its physical exercise. Then we'll discuss how Srimad Bhagavatam is a spotless Purana and which rejects all cheating religions. Then we'll see actual examples from Shastras about how the devotees perfected their lives by following the method which is described in the second chapter of second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In the Mahabharata, in the Vana Parva, there is story of this. Actually, before the Durvas Muni actually visits Yudhishthir Maharaj, sent by Duryodhan, Vyasdev actually meets Yudhishthir Maharaj and he gives him preamble about Durvas Muni. He says that there was one rishi called Mudgala, and he was living just like a pigeon. You know how a pigeon lives? He just goes to the forest fields or some fields and he just eats some corn. And there was this rishi who was living a very austere life stage, and he was just going to the fields and he was just picking up some corn from the field, and he was whatever he used to get in 1 week he used to eat by that, subsist by that. And then he was very charitable also. He used to feed all his guests, and if something will remain then only he'll eat it. And seeing his charity, austerity, sometimes the heavenly demigods also used to visit him and eat at his house. So once Durvasa Muni, he visited his house, you know, and he used to ask him, you know, please give me. And he's a very highly tempered person. So he used to come and ask him, please give me something. And he used to eat everything he had. And there was nothing left for that Mudgala Rishi to feed for his family. And he came like, and after eating everything, he used to say thank you, and he just used to walk out. So he did it like once. And Mudgala Rishi did not show any sign of, you know, this angry or anything. And consecutively for 7 days he came like that. And 7 days he consecutively ate from Mudgala Rishi's house. And Mudgala Rishi did not show any kind of, you know, why this person is not showing any kind of gratitude to me. And on the 7th day, actually, when Durvasa Muni actually noticed this, that this person is not getting angry on me, or he is not, you know, getting disturbed by my such behavior, he actually became very pleased. And he said that soon you will be promoted to the heavenly kingdom. And very soon this thing happened. The very next day, heavenly messengers came in a heavenly airplane, and they wanted to take him to the heavenly kingdom. But Mudgala Rishi, before going to heavenly kingdom, just asked this messenger, can you please tell me the advantages and disadvantages of heavenly kingdom? This messenger actually became very surprised. He said that generally people are so eager to go to heavenly kingdom, you know. They don't think twice before going. So why are you asking? You know, it's very exceptional that you are asking this to me. So anyway, he said that in heavenly kingdom there is no signs of old age, people don't get disease, there is unlimited enjoyment which you cannot think of. A person, their clothes, they don't get dirty. Now this thing, even when we look at the description, you know, it matches with Singapore also in one sense, you know, your clothes don't get dirty. If you tell this to a person in India, he will think that it is just like, you know, heavenly kingdom. And there is unlimited sense enjoyment, you know, there is so much liquor available, whatever. So, but then he said that, okay, tell me some disadvantage of heavenly kingdom. Then he said that at the end, it is also said that the heavenly demigods, they are wearing always garlands, and their flowers, they don't fade away. Sometimes the demigods also are also referred as Animesha. Nimesha means, actually the word Nimeshar Bhakyo means, that means the time taken by the upper eyelid to meet the lower eyelid, that is called Nimesha. And Animesha means a person who does not blink, that is called Animesha. So So these demigods were called as animes because they don't blink. And then they are always wearing garlands of flowers which never fade away. But when the demigod, one more disadvantage of being in heavenly kingdom is that you cannot earn any pious activities over there. Whatever karma of pious activities you are performed over here, that's it, you know, for that much time. So when your pious activities are getting exhausted or your pious karmas are getting exhausted, your garlands that you are wearing start to fade away. And you are unceremoniously kicked away from the heavenly kingdom and you take birth in the earthly planet again. And over here again you have to perform, go to the Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi, again perform pious activities and you know, go to the heavenly kingdom. So Mudgal Rishi said that thank you very much, I am no more interested in going to the heavenly kingdom. So he said that I'll and so you tell me is there any higher destination than heavenly kingdom? He said yes, there is the realm of the Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Loka. Over there once you go, there are much more higher enjoyments or higher opportunities available in the Vishnu kingdom, and from there you don't return back. So he said that okay, I'm no longer interested in going to heavenly kingdom, I'll better go to Vishnu Loka instead. So this is, and Mudgal Rishi after that he performed proper austerities. He actually worshipped Lord Vishnu, not just charity, but charity with the aim of serving Lord Vishnu. And then he, at the end of his life, he actually went to the abode of Lord Vishnu. So actually in this world, you know, we are always trying, it is not surprising that people want to go to heavenly kingdom, you know. We generally speak of them in a very abhorring way, people want to go to heavenly kingdom. But in our own life, we always want a comfortable situation. You know, that's the reason people, you know, like myself, they come from India to Singapore, because you are want a so-called comfortable situation in life. You know, there was an experiment done in the scientists. What they did is that they took a rat, some rat, and they had arranged a labyrinth, you know, a kind of ways and means, and there were some switches kept over there. So on one switch, if the rat will put his mouth, he'll get an electric shock. And there are some switches where if he'll put his mouth, he'll get some food. And there are many switches like this, and the rats were put. And when the rat, they used to try out actually, you know, that now over there they'll get a shock, they used to get shock. And on other switches they used to put, they used to get food. And every day they used to change the combination of switches like that. And the rat, they used to enjoy this actually, you know, how to find the combination. And one day what they did is that they opened the cages, not the doors of the cages. And they said, and so that the rat, if they want, they can just move out of that, you know, that entire arrangement. But surprisingly, the rat did not wanted to go out. They just wanted to find out what is the today's combination. So it is just like that, you know, and we always want to try the combination. Like our situation is also just like that rat. And we are always hunting for pleasure, always trying to find different kinds of pleasures in this life. And it is said in this, as per the Shastra, the entire process of finding pleasure is described as a very painful process. Actually, in 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj says that the only way by which you can be happy in this world is by not trying to be happy in this world. Because the entire process of finding pleasure, this pleasure in this world is actually illusory. You know, in the corporate world there is something which is called as the carrot and the stick. There is a ass, they show the diagram of an ass, and a person is sitting over the ass with a carrot, with a stick in his hand and a carrot dangling in front. So the ass thinks that if he just goes ahead, he'll able to eat that carrot, you know. But the moment he moves ahead, the carrot also moves the same distance ahead. But if, and this is the technique which is employed by the person who is employing the ass to work, to make that ass work for him. But even though the carrot is moving ahead, if the ass stops at that moment, the stick is very immediate. You know, the carrot that ass may get to eat at the very end of the day. But if he stops walking, he gets the stick very immediately. So it's just like that. Even, you know, there is one interesting thing. in the American Declaration of Independence, now they, it promises three things: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know? They don't say that you will get happiness in America. They said that you will be happy to pursue the happiness in America. So it is just like that. There is always pursuit of happiness. You know, everyone is pursuing happiness. Second thing about this material pleasure is that it is very addictive. You know, the greatest example of addictive nature of the of this material pleasure is you can find in 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where about the story of Maharaj Pururava. You know, how he got addicted to Urvashi. You know, he did austerity for the after when the Urvashi actually left after being cheated. You know, after she actually cheated by the two lambs, and that story is there. And he got so much attached to Urvashi, you know, Pururava, that he used to perform austerity for entire year to enjoy with her for one night, you know, and after the one night she'll again go back, and again he used to do austerity for entire year to have one night association of with Urvashi. So this material pleasure is so addictive, you know. After enjoying it once, you want to have more and more of it. No, we don't. It never just it in Bhagavad Gita it is said that just like a fire can never be satisfied by unlimited supply of fuel, in the same way the lust, it can never be satisfied. Then there is great risk in getting this material pleasure which we are searching for, and the risk which we can see is that, you know, people, it is in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that the money is sweeter than honey. People, for acquiring this material wealth, they can go to such an extent. You know, right now we don't see the circuses over here, but people, when we go to circus, the people who are performing these acrobatic performances, you know, daredevil stunts, they are risking their own life for getting some small money, you know. Even people, actually it is said that, you know, in our entire life, from age 20 to 40, we earn money. We spend our health to earn money, and from 40 to 60 and onwards, we spend the same money on spending on our health, which we have spent for earning that money. So it's like that. There is so much risk, and then there is this material enjoyment is stale. It is risky. It is stale. After some time, you know, it becomes so distasteful. You know, if you have 10 samosas, and if one wants to eat samosas, for example. And after eating one samosa, you know, you feel okay. Two samosas still okay. You know, three samosas, it's okay, no, I'm satisfied now. Four samosa is the austerity. And fifth samosa, we just say that, you know, no more samosas in life. So even you know, when a child grows up, it's so illusory actually. When a child grows up, he says that, you know, my younger brother is enjoying, you know. And once I become older, I'll get to enjoy. So when it is said that when the clock is ticking, when a child is seeing the clock and he says that why it is ticking so slow, you know, it should tick so fast, I want to grow up. And when a old man sees the same clock ticking, he says that why it is ticking so fast, you know, my time is going up, you know. So the child wants to grow up, you know, just like a person who is just appearing for his, you know, O level examination. It is called SSC in India. You know, he says that once I pass this O-level examination, I'll be happy. You know, then there is higher examination. There is some degree course. Once I get this degree, I'll be happy. You know, always that thing is there. Then after that degree examination, once he passes that degree examination, he says that, you know, once I get this job, you know, I'll be happy. Once he gets that job, he said, once I have now I have job. Once I get married, I'll be happy. And once he gets married, that entire illusion of happiness also goes. I have the liberty to speak right this thing right now. So that's why to say, you know, there is happiness is always in the pursuit of happiness. You know, there is the actual happiness is enjoyed only in the pursuit of happiness. So it's called this flickering. You know, this happiness is so flickering. That's why it said that jivana. This kamala dala jala jivana talmala, bhaja hure mana sri nanda nandana abhay charana ravindare. this happiness in this material world is just like, you know, the water on the, you know, lotus leaf. Just, you know, the nature of the lotus leaf is that it does not, it is hydrophobic. You know, it does that water does not stay on the leaf. Just a little, but it is situated on the water. But just you just touch that lotus leaf a little bit and the water moves out. So it's just like that water on that leaf is compared to the happiness in this world. So Krishna actually summarizes this in just one shloka, you know. Yehi samsparsaja bhoga dukkha yonaya evate adi antavantaya kaunteya nate suramate budha. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to the contact of material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have beginning and an end, and so the wise men do not delight unto them. So this actually Pushpagopal Prabhu makes this statement so many times, right, that the only problem with this material world, this pleasures of this material world, is that, you know, it has a beginning and an end. There is pleasure definitely, but it has a beginning and an end, and it is for such a short moment of time, and we have to really endeavor for getting those pleasures. That's why Krishna says in this, as we can see in this verse, you see, that at the end of the annihilation, you know, this entire planets are burst out, you know, they are burnt out to ashes. That's why Krishna says, A Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punar Avartino Arjuna Mam Upetye Tu Kanteya Punar Janmana Vidyate. From the highest planet of the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery, wherein there is repeated birth and death. But one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes this birth again. So we have to actually endeavor to find, you know, what is real knowledge. That's why it is said that once we have this human form of birth, life, you know, we should inquire supreme. Athato brahma jigyasa. This is one of the Vedanta Sutra. Aad, you know, ahar nidra bhaya maitunam cha cha samanen etat pashubhit naranam nirnanam dharmo hitesham adhiko vishesha dharmena hina pashubhit samanam. Ahar nidra, the eating, sleeping, mating and defending, these four things are common between even the animals and the human beings. Dharmo hitesham, the only thing that is special prerogative of the human being is that he can inquire about supreme. And if he does not do that, then he becomes on the same level of animals, a sophisticated animal. You know, Prabhupada used to say that the dog, you know, the dog is walking on four legs and you are going on a four wheels. That is the only difference. So there are different ways of gaining knowledge. You know, there is pratyaksha praman, with that knowledge that we can gain by direct sensory perception. Then there is anuman, the knowledge that we can gain by speculation, you know, thinking. Then there is knowledge which we can get from authority, that is called the shabda pramana. You know, for example, a child who wants to know who his father is, you know, how, even if the child grows up and he becomes a very great scientist and he can perform DNA tests, you know, How many people he can perform the DNA test on to actually find who his father is? Very few. You know? He can actually, there is very little chance that by which he can know who his father is by actually performing this so-called scientific experiment. And if he starts thinking, you know, this person looks, you know, he looks like me, this person has a behavior like me, you know, maybe he's my father. It is a very foolish attempt. So by anuman also, one cannot actually gain knowledge correct. One cannot 100% be sure of the knowledge. The only way one can be sure of knowledge is by asking who his father is by to his mother, you know, because she is the authority. And when the mother says that, you know, he is your father, he should not doubt it. He should not think, why he is my father, why he is not my father. So this is called a foolish method. You know, the child will be foolish by that. So it is said that the Vedas are called the Ved Mata and Krishna is his Parampita. So if you want to know who our Supreme Father is, then we should approach the basic understanding of knowledge. Generally, people in India or whatever, they say that, you know, we are scientific, we don't want to accept the authority. But as Prabhupada says over here, you know, that we should, for a common man, you know, both modern science and Vedic wisdom are simply to be accepted, because none of the statements, either of the modern science or the Vedic literature, can be actually verified by him. You know, I was studying in my 12th standard in India, and we had an experiment of finding the value of G, you know, the gravitational constant. It is something 9.8 per meter per second square, whatever. So everyone used to do this experiment. You know, they had this Newton's pendulum, and, you know, by that oscillation is to find out. And we all of us used to do that experiment. There was actually method procedure of doing that. But hardly anyone used to get a value of 9.8. You know? We used to get values of 15, 16. One person got value of 108, you know, it's very auspicious number. And there was one person who actually did everything perfectly correct, you know. And he actually got a value of 10.5, you know. And he said that actually, and he was very convinced that I have followed the exact procedure, everything, and the value of G is 10.5. He was very convinced for that. But then everyone said, do you think you are bigger than Newton? So whatever, we used to just adjust our reading so that we get value of 9.8. You know, so even in our so-called modern, it's all humbug. You know, we say that we are so scientific approach or whatever. You know, generally the truth of the matter is that we accept the authority in science. We also accept the authority of what the scientists say. You know. In India right now they say that they are scientifically verified, you know, in Singapore also they write scientifically verified. No person, they just advertise that no person ever questions which scientist in which laboratory verified this, you know, show me the report, you know. Nobody, whenever they write scientifically verified, they accept that, okay, this is scientifically verified, true. Later on they said, after some time they said that this is scientifically verified, that previously scientifically verified method was not correct. This is a more correct method. You know, Sridhar Krishna Prabhu many times say that newer medicines, they just come up every day in the market. So for a common man, he does not have the facilities, the means or the ways that he can actually verify what is being said to it. He just accepts the authority. We just accept the authority while boarding a bus or whatever in our common. We just don't ask the person who is driving the bus for the license, show me the license. In the same way, we are actually accepting the authorities in all the way. So in spiritual life also, we accept the authority of the acharyas. You know, whatever they say as truth. And actually, even from the scientific point of view, actually, even the Newton as a scientist, he was very God-fearing and he was actually a theist. You know, he had created that entire model of universe and his friend approached him and who created it? He just came out, he said. No, tell me, who created this model, you know, who just moves, all the planets are moving around the sun, you know, who created this model of the universe, which he had in his drawing room. And he said that, you know, that it just came out. So that for his friend actually became very angry. He said that, how can you say that this model, which is so perfect, you know, by just moving the year that all the planets are moving around the sun, how can it just come out like that? So Newton said to him that if you cannot believe that this model, which is just a replica of the entire thing, can just come out by itself, then how can you believe that this entire universe has just come out by itself? You know? There has to be a creator for it. And in this, so it's very foolish to think that, you know, that this entire universe has just come out. It has to have a creator. You know, there is in Panchatantra there is a story of four students. You know, who have just received a knowledge from their guru, and their four students have got four different faculties of knowledge, and they have just passed out, just got their degree in their hand, and just, you know, roaming in the forest, and they saw some broken bones lying over there, you know, of a big creature, and one student says that by the knowledge that I have received, you know, I can actually arrange these bones in a proper skeleton, you know. So he chants some mantra and these bones, they get arranged in a proper skeleton. Then the second student says that I have a mantra by which I can actually make proper, I can put flesh in those bones, you know. And he chants this mantra and actually there is flesh on those bones. And now that creature resembles lion, you know. Then the fourth student is actually very intelligent. He said that, you know, before you do anything, I'll just climb up, you know. And the third one says that, you know, actually I have the power by which I can infuse life in this lion. So this fourth student is very intelligent. He said that, you know, you do whatever you want, I'm just climbing up. And then the third student, he actually chants a mantra and by which that he makes that line, you know, full of life. He puts life in that line. And we don't have to tell what happened. So these scientists, they really have this knowledge. You know, they can do wonderful things, you know, but they don't have the vision, the commonsensical vision of how to utilize this knowledge for the good of the society. So they are just like these three students, you know, who have the knowledge by which they can make this, you know, that entire Jurassic Park movie or whatever, you know. It's just all whatever it is stated, you know, in the whatever these people, the so-called stories they perform, they have the basis in the Shastras. You know, all the original themes are from the Shastras. Very simple thing. But then they make big blockbuster movies out of it. You know. The same thing, the Frankenstein, you know, they create this Frankenstein. So they have this knowledge, you know, but they don't have, that's why in Vedic custom this knowledge was not shared to each and everyone. You know. There has to be a proper patra or the recipient of the knowledge, and the character is supposed to be the patra for this knowledge. You know, so actually it is said in the Shastras that we are all over here, you know, there it is just like in this material world, all of us are actually rebellious souls, you know, we have actually rebelled from Krishna. You know, it is said, Krishna bhairmukha hana bhogavancha kare nikatastha maya tare jhapatiya dhare. You know, that this, because of his desire to enjoy this material world, the living entity is dressed with the material and gross body. Thus he is given a chance to enjoy the senses. This maya, when we become bahirmukh to Krishna, when we turn our back to Krishna, then the maya, it just catches us, you know, it is a jhapatiya dhare. And then because of that, we develop different desires of enjoying and lording over the material nature, you know. So the process of yoga is basically, means we are turned out back towards Krishna, it is just a means by which we can re-establish our connection to Krishna. That's why yoga is called as it is process of connecting. You know? The word yoke in English, it comes actually from the word yoga, you know, that's the connection. So there are different processes of connection, of restoring our connection with the Supreme. There is Ashtanga Yoga of physical exercises. Then there is Dhyana Yoga of, you know, doing proper meditational practices. Then there is Karma Yoga, by which we can do our activities as an offering to Krishna. And then there is Bhakti Yoga, which is actually a direct means of establishing the connection with Krishna. So there are the other three different kinds of yoga are actually indirect means. You know, because people, since they have turned their back towards Krishna and they are envious of Krishna, as we heard yesterday by this Madan Mohan Prabhu, that we are in this material world because we have the envy of Krishna. You know, so it is very difficult to convince these envious people to directly serve Krishna. So they are, so just like, you know, it is said, when a mother wants to feed a child, you know, she just puts the spoon in front of the child and she says, see this spoon, see, it is an airplane, you know, and it is going like this, like this, like this, and it will go in your mouth. similarly Vyasadeva, he writes different kind of Vedic literature, you know, by which he describes different indirect means of, you know, serving Krishna. He wrote Vyasadeva in the, actually if you read the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, fourth chapter, Vyasadeva actually, by knowing the onset of Kali Yuga, by people will have Manda Buddhi, Manda Bhagya, Manda Sumanda Matayo, that people, they will be very short-lived, they will have Manda Buddhi, they will have very short intelligence and memory, and they will be unfortunate. And because of and worst of all, they will be always quarreling with each other. So just for being merciful on the fallen conditioned souls of Kali Yuga, Vyasadeva actually wrote this literature, Vedic literature. And he first wrote the four Vedas, then he wrote the Mahabharata. You know, but still he was feeling the despondency in his heart, you know, he was not actually feeling satisfied. And then in the fifth chapter of first canto, it is described that while he was feeling the despondency in his heart, Narad Muni came to him, his spiritual master. And then Narad Muni explained to him, you know, because you are feeling despondency in your heart because No, you are actually not properly and directly glorified the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And at that time, he actually gave instruction to write a literature by which he can directly glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by receiving this instruction, he actually composed this Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, that's why it is said, you know, Dharma Projita Kaitavatra Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam Vedyam Vastavam Atravastu Shivadam Tapatrayona Moolanam Srimad Bhagavate Mahamune Krite Kim Vapare Ishvarah Sadyoridi Avarude Atra Kritibihi Shushrushbishish Satshanat. Translation: completely rejecting all religious activity which are materially motivated, this Bhagavad Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in their heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion, for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Srimad Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by his culture of knowledge, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is established within the heart. You know, actually, there was a Britisher. He wanted to come and eat jackfruit. He came to India, he wanted to eat jackfruit. So, when he came to India, he went to a small village. And knowing that a Britisher wanted to eat a jackfruit, the villager, he thought that he might have never seen a jackfruit first of all. So he went to the tree, cut the jackfruit, he removed the outer thorny shell of the jackfruit. Then there is a very thick sticky substance the jackfruit has. He removed that also. Then he took the pulp of the jackfruit, he removed the seeds of the jackfruit, put the pulp on a nice plate, put nice honey over it. And he brought that in front of that Britisher to eat. But when the Britisher saw that, he said that, no, I don't want this, I want the real jackfruit to eat. You know? So, first of all, he does not know how to eat a jackfruit. Everything is arranged in front of him in a proper plate to eat, and then he is saying that I want to eat the proper jackfruit. Such is our condition. It is said that Srimad Bhagavatam is compared Nigama Kalpato Galitam Phalam Plavam Sukha Mukhad Amrita Darvam Samyutam Sivata Bhagavatam Rasam Alayam Moor Aho Rasika Bhui Bhavikaha. O expert and thoughtful man, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of desire tree of the Vedic literature. It emanated from the lips of Sri Shukadeva Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although this nectarian juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. So this Srimad Bhagavatam is actually the ripened fruit of this Vedic tree of knowledge. People generally say, you know, I want to study the actual Vedas. But I don't want this Srimad Bhagavatam, I want to study the actual Vedas. But this Srimad Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of that Vedas, the Vedic tree of knowledge. And it is given in a way by which people of this Kali Yuga can understand, appreciate and develop the highest truth. Actually, in the Srimad Bhagavatam second canto, it is said that Brahma studied the Vedas three times and before reaching the conclusion that the Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vedeshu Advaitam Achyutam Anadim Anantarupam Adyam Purana Purusham Navayavunam Cha Vedushu Durlabha Adurlabha Matma Bhaktav Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajani. By studying the Vedas, it is very Durlabha, Vedushu Durlabha, but Adurlabha. Adurlabha means very easily achieved. Vedeshu Dukhu Durlabha and Adurlabha by following the process of Bhakti. Vedeshu Durlabha Adurlabha Matma Bhaktav Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajani. So by studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, Narayana Namaste Naranthiva Narutam Devim Saraswati Vyasam Tatojavadirya Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Saivaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. This process of Bhakti is established within one's heart as an irrevocable fact. That is the strength and power of Srimad Bhagavatam. So actually, it is very interesting, you know, that in this second chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, the process is described about how a proper mystic yogi, you know, by performing proper asanas, you know, last time, you know, there was once Nam Singh was giving class because it was a very technical verse, you know, Anahat Chakra and all that. So, Prabhupada actually in this chapter also he gives so much technical details about the practice of yoga. You know, proper Ashtanga yoga and how a proper yogi gives up his life. And actually it is true. But if you notice in the end part of this verses of this chapter, Prabhupada actually translates this as a bhakti yogi. He does not translate this as a, you know, mystic yogi or whatever. No? And there is a reason for that. Well, if you study Srimad Bhagavatam, you will come across some certain personalities who actually showed how to implement, you know, they are proper devotees. One is Bhishma Dev himself, you know, how he passed away at the end of his life. First of all, his life itself is a great, you know, just like Kunti Mata, even from that point of view, Bhishma Dev's life is also a great struggle. You know. First of all, he was, you know, he had taken a great vow that he will never marry, but just for satisfaction of his, you know, father, Shantanu, that he will never get married. So, then for Shantanu's children from Satyavati, Vichitravirya, you know, he had to bring, from Saimvara Saimani, he has to bring, forcibly take three daughters, you know, Amba, Ambalika and Ambika. Yeah. And these three daughters he bought for Vichitravirya to get married. Out of these two daughters, Ambalika and Ambika were ready to marry Vichitravirya. But Amba said, you know, actually I had given my heart already to Shalva, you know, and I cannot accept him. So Bhishma said, okay, I'll take you to Shalva. You know. So when he took to Shalva, Shalva said that I will not accept any, since you have touched, I will not accept her. So this Amba said, you know, now you have to accept her. She just said to Bhishma that now you have to accept me, you know, now Shalva is not accepting me. And since, and even Vichitravirya will not accept me. So now since you have touched me by taking from the Saramvara ceremony, you have to accept me. But he said that, no, I cannot, I have taken a vow that I will never marry in my life, you know. So, but she was adamant, you know, she was not ready to accept this. So she went to Parashuram, you know, his spiritual master of Bhishma Dev, and she pleaded to him that I want to marry, please order. Actually, once Radhanath Maharaj was giving this class, and he was narrating the same pastime, and there was some brahmachari sitting, and he said, Radhanath Maharaj said to one brahmachari, no, if your spiritual master tells you, marry that Mataji, what will you do? You know? Bhishma said, Bhishma even, you know, rejected the order of his spiritual master, that I won't marry, you know, this is my vow. You know? In the same way, he also said, you know, that I won't marry. Bhishma said that I won't marry. So Parashuram said, if you don't marry, then I have to kill you. You know? I have to fight with you. And then there was a very haughty discussion that took place, just like two Kshatriyas discuss. You know? Generally we find your body will be eaten by the vultures, you know. Mm-hmm. And then Bhishmadeva said that, you know, you killed the Kshatriyas 21 times because Bhishma was not there. So there was this kind of discussion that took place, and then these two great personalities, they actually fought. For 21 days they were continuously fighting. And just to give an idea, you know, how Bhishma Dev was, you know, it is said that Bhishma Dev used to fight with the speed of mind, and when he used to get tired after fighting, you know, he used to fight with the speed of wind. No? So that was the power of Bhishma Dev, you know, and he was fighting. And another thing is that because of his great vow that he will never, you know, marry, for the sake of his father Shantanu had given him benediction that you will die only when you desire to die. No, that is called Ichha Mrityu. That was the benediction. So actually both of them were invincible. So there was, and at one time there is description in Mahabharat that Parashuram actually fired a very fiery arrow which went right through the chest of Bhishmadev, you know, and still Bhishmadev was alive and he was actually fighting and that wound was healed. That was the power and the prowess of Bhishmadev. And then by end of this fighting, actually Parashuram also realized, you know, there is no way I can defeat him. You know? So he told that, dear Ambika, dear Amba, actually I cannot convince him. And actually became pleased by his disciple, you know, that the way he was fighting, Bhishmadev was fighting with him. And he actually blessed Bhishmadev that, you know, that you will actually have a very long life and your family is spread all across the three worlds. And at that time, the different sages, they approached Parashurama and said that, you know, this Bhishmadev is not destined to be killed by you. You cannot kill him. He is destined to be killed by vows, by the arrows of Arjuna. You know? So there is no point for you to fight with him. And then he actually humbly told Amba that from now on I decide that I will never fight again. That was he decided. And please now you decide, whatever you want to do, you are free to do. I cannot help you in this regard. And then Amba, she performed great austerity and she pleased Shiva and she said, you know, that I want to be the cause of the death of, I actually wanted to kill, that is my sole resolve. And then Amba, she took birth as Shikhandi. She was born as a woman. You know, and later, that's a different story in itself, that how he became a man. And Bhishma had taken a vow that I will not fight with a person who has a name of a woman, who looks like a woman, you know, who was woman at some point of his life. So because of all these conditions, you know, it was never... even whenever Shikhandi used to come in front of him of Bhishmadev in the Mahabharata war, he never used to fire arrows at him, you know, because he had taken a vow like that. So, and Bhishma was so powerful, for the first 9 days it was no way that Yudhishthira will actually be able to, and many times Yudhishthira says that, I just want to retire, I just want to give up, and I just want to go to forest and live a life of ascetic. And it was Krishna was telling him that No, Shikhandi will be able to kill Bhishmadev. And he was not knowing how can Shikhandi kill, you know, nobody can actually counteract Bhishmadev. And at the 10th day, before the 10th day, actually they said, you know, that how can we kill, you know, Bhishmadev? So they said that we'll approach Bhishmadev himself. And such is the great personality of Bhishmadev that he himself revealed, you know, that how can he kill him, kill me. So they approached Bhishmadev with folded palms, Pandavas, and said that, "No, please tell us, O grandsire, how can we kill you?" And Bhishmadev actually at that time said that, "If you want victory, you should relentlessly pursue on the first task of killing me." That is what he said. And he said to Yudhishthira that the only way you can kill me is by bringing Shikhandi in front of Arjuna. If Shikhandi in front of Arjuna, then I'll put my weapons down. I'll stop fighting. And then Arjuna can fire arrows at me. And then I'll lie down on the battlefield. And they did exactly the same on the 10th day. And on the 10th day, Bhishma was fighting so valiantly that he was killing like anything. But then they arranged in such a way that Shikhandi was in front, Arjuna was firing arrows from behind. And then by these arrows that were shot at Bhishmadev, He lied down in the battle on the bed of this arrows, and it is said that there are so many arrows on the body of Bhishmadev that there is no space for two fingers also, you know, and he was lying down on the bed. One interesting thing about this pastime of Bhishmadev is that both Bhishmadev and Kamsa, you know, they knew that who is going to kill them. Kamsa knew that the eighth son of Devaki will be killing them, and Bhishmadev knew that Arjuna will be killing them. But still, knowing all this, Bhishma was so much loving towards Arjuna, and Arjuna was also so much loving towards Bhishma. But on the contrary, Kamsa, you know, he knew that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is going to come, and he'll be the cause of my death. And still he was always planning, scheming, you know, how can he kill this poor son, you know, eighth son of Devaki. So this is the difference between the divine mentality and the demonic mentality. And when he was lying on the bed of arrow, that is when everything ended, you know, he actually had Krishna in front of him at the time of his death, you know, and he was having all the devotees near him. And if you read this narration of how a yogi passes, you know, in the second canto, the exactly the same description is given in how Bhishma Dev passes. You know. He actually raised his soul through the Brahma Rantra, you know, chakra of his skull, and his soul passed through that entrance. It is also described in Mahabharata as well as in Srimad Bhagavatam, how Bhishma Dev passed away. It is the same as what this which is described over here. Then the second personality which I can think of is Dadichi, who actually gave up his body in that yogic trance. You know? This is a big story. So due to how much time we have to read? Okay. Okay. So the story is of that of Dadichi. The how actually Indra ended up killing this Vishwarup, his own spiritual master, whom he had after Brihaspati retired, you know, he had Vishwarup as his spiritual master. So when Vishwarup was killed, you know, he killed Vishwarup because he was actually offering oblations to the demons also. You know, so that demons, because he was from his maternal side, he was from the demons. So at that time, Prithvashta, Vishwarup's father, he performed a big yajna. And by from that yajna, he actually had this demon called as Vritrasur. You know? He came up from that yajna. And from that Vritrasur, when this came, he was creating havoc everywhere. You know? So they did not know how to counteract this demon, how to you know, stop this demon from creating all this break. So actually this all the demigods, they went to Vishnu and prayed, please tell us the way by which you can, you know, stop this demon. So first of all, Vishnu told them that those were my pure devotees, they never come to me for this material benediction. Although you have come, I'll tell you the way by which you can fulfill your desire. There is this great sage Dadichi, and he's a very powerful yogi. If you can somehow or the other convince him to give up his body and make a big and from his skeleton or from his bones, if you can make a vajra weapon, then with that vajra weapon you will be able to kill this demon Vritrasura. And then this demigod, they approached this Dadichi, and there is a very nice description which is given over there about how they, this demigod, you know, they first of all were fearing for their own life. That's why they had approached Dadichi, you know, and they are now requesting Dadichi to give up his body so that their own lives will be spared, you know. But Dadichi was such a great personality. First he wanted to test them, you know. He was saying that self-preservation is the first right of every living entity. No, I don't know, Prabhuji, but I have done many sinful acts in my life, you know. If you try to, just try to trouble an insect, you know, just a small ant is moving, try to just kill that ant, you know. Don't try it, Prabhuji, I'm just, you know. But you can see how many that ant can perform literally mystic tasks to save its life, you know, even though it's in the body of ant, you know. In the same way, we cannot imagine what kind of acts a living entity can do for saving its own body. You know? So, that is what Dadichi said, that body is so dear to a living entity, he never wants to give up. But then the demigod said to him, very nicely said there, "O exalted Brahmana, persons like yourself are very kind and compassionate toward the people in general. Such persons can give anything for benefit of others, including their own bodies." And then there is very very nice and very very high philosophical point which is said, you know, about the persons who are giving and the persons who are asking. You know, very nice philosophical point. Those who are too self-interested beg something from others, not knowing their difficulties. You know, people who go to beg something from others, not knowing the difficulty of the giver. Similarly, one who is able to give in charity but does not do so is callous to the difficulties of the beggar. Actually, it's the one who knows that the difficulty of the beggar and the background and the difficulties that the beggar is going through, that one cannot stop from giving himself to that beggar. No? For this reason, a beggar should not ask charity from one who is in difficulty. And one who is able to do so should not deny giving to the beggar. That is what the demigod say, that we are begging from you your body, and you are so compassionate, please give your body to us, you know, so that we can create this vessel. So hearing the, and then Dandiji said that I am always just simply testing you, like this, by saying this. And then Dadichi actually sat in trance, exactly followed the process which is mentioned in the second chapter of second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and gave up his body, went to the Vaikuntha Logas in that trance. And then from that body, Vishwakarma made that weapon of what is it called? Vajra, that thunderbolt weapon of, and when there was the fight that took place between Indra and Vritrasura, with that, actually at one point, you know, Indra, that Vritrasura actually swallowed this Indra, and he was in this neck over there. And it is said that Indra was protected inside the, and at that time by Vritrasura had performed his purpose of his life, you know, because he has actually swallowed Indra. So his purpose of life was fulfilled. And at that time, even Vritrasura gave up his body by entering into samadhi. No, it is described, Prabhupada described in the purport over there, that Vritrasura actually goes into samadhi and gives up his body. And because of his entering into samadhi, no, his neck becomes very stiff. And it actually took Indra one whole year to cut through the neck of Vritrasura by his vajra weapon and come out. And it is also said that why Indra was protected inside the body of Vritrasura? Because the same Vishwarupa, the brother of Vritrasura, had given him the Narayana Kavacha, you know. And because of that Narayana Kavacha, Indra was unaffected within the body of Vritrasura. So at the actually, if you study the entire pastime of Vritrasura and Indra, many times Indra is prayed or praised as the killer of Vritrasura, but that is not a praise as such, because it was a devotee whom he had killed. So this Vritrasura was actually a devotee, and he prays at the end of his life, Aham Hare Tavapadaika Moola Dasanu Daso Bhavitasmi Bhuyaha Manasmareta Shupater Gunam Se Dinit Vaka Karamotkayaha. So this is how the Vritrasura prays, you know, at the end of his life. So these are the two personalities in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which actually gave this life by following this process which is mentioned in the second chapter. So I just stop here by saying this sloka of Ishopanishad, you know. It is said, generally it is said that we should remember at the end of our life, you know, about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know. That whoever thinks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead at the end of his life attains my abode. But in the 17th verse of Ishopanishad, a reverse psychology is given, you know. It is said that Om Kritosmara Kritam Smara Kritosmara Kritam Smara. It is said that let this temporary body be burnt to ashes, and let this air of life be merged with the totality of air. O my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, because you are the ultimate beneficiary. Please remember all that I have done for you. So a devotee in Ishopanishad is actually praying to Lord that at the end of my life, you please remember about me. Because I am not sure whether I will be able to remember you. So you please remember about me. And please take me back home, back to Godhead. So I pray your pray beg for your forgiveness for all the shortcomings in my lecture, and please bless me that I will be able to think of Lord, and Lord will think of me at the time of my death. Thank you. Yes.
Before understanding the Krishna as the Supreme Personality of God.
Yes.
That was just going to Brahma Samhita.
Yeah.
The initial description they have given there.
Yeah.
It says that first Brahma got the realization that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God.
Okay.
Then he prayed, then those Shlokas come of Brahma.
Okay.
Then where this point comes that Brahma takes the time to read the Vedas.
But before that he performed austerity. He performed austerity. Before, it is described that when Brahma was created, you know, he was born on lotus and there was complete darkness in the universe. And he did not know what to do. And he just heard these two words, tapa, tapa, tapa. So he performed austerity at that time. And by performing that austerity, see, the studying of the Vedas does not literally mean that you are opening book and you know, you are studying. And by that study, one will not be able to. It is, that's why it is said that by that kind of study, it is durlabha. One will hardly, there are so many great Indologists, you know. Max Muller, he studied 30 years, you know, all Vedas, all Vedic literature, and he is considered the greatest of Indologists. But his whole and sole purpose was how to disprove the Vedic literature. You know? So this, by such kind of study, one cannot receive. One has to study by no, actually, first thing is that one has to accept, at least theoretically, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then by studying one will come to know how he is Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the difference. That's why if you study the Bhagavad Gita also, in the very beginning, in the introduction, Srila Prabhupada mentions, before studying this Bhagavad Gita, one has to at least theoretically accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unless you at least theoretically accept Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one will never understand the entire meaning of Bhagavad Gita. Then you said that you should surrender to the dark within Krishna or something like that, one will come to know. And these people will be still regarded as the highest scholars of Vedic understanding. And by such scholarly attempts, one will never be able to understand the essence of the truth. One has to approach in the bona fide parampara. And for Brahmaji, Krishna was himself the first guru in that way. Sorry,
Jai Prabhupada ki, Jai Jai Prabhu Dev ki, Jai Jai Guru Prabhu. So we come to the second part of the program, and we will request Sudarshan Prabhu. Brahma Samhita is